Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Forever Dog.
Just between us.
Hey.
Just between us.
Hey.
Hello, I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and pickleball enthusiast.
Oh my God, hi, I'm Gabby Dunn. I'm a writer, bicon, bisexual icon, wink, and explain pickleball.
Well, I recently went home to New York and my dad has started playing pickleball like within the last year. And for those of you who aren't in the retirement community, pickleball is like imagine playing ping pong, but you're standing on the court.
Okay.
It's like a lot of volleys. It's really fun. And I like played it briefly with him and John when we were in New York. And then this past weekend, John and I bought our own rackets and balls. And we went to like these public courts and these people were like, oh yeah, come play with us. We just sub people in. It's like, you just like rotate who plays. And we met all these lovely people who like are part of this pickleball community. And it was very exciting.
Pickleball is like racquetball. What is it?
I just described it to you. It's like standing in a ping pong table.
Oh, okay. Mal's dad is very into pickleball and also an older gentleman in New York City, in New York area. So I feel like this is like a thing.
Oh, it's huge. It's super fun. And it's, I think, easier to pick up than tennis, but you still get that racquetball thrill.
Because you used to be a tennis player.
Well, yeah, I still play tennis, but I used to be a good tennis player. And now I'm an okay tennis player.
You were going to go pro, right?
No.
You were going to at least play college, right?
I mean, there was a chance that if I like had it, I had knee issues and gone to boarding school, which meant I couldn't play year round anymore. There was like a version of my life where I maybe could have been like D3, but I doubt even that.
Who is that version of Allison? A D3 tennis player?
I don't know who that version is. I've had to learn how to like turn off my competitiveness while playing.
Really?
Yeah, because now I don't care if I win or anything. I just want to like play well. So like if I play a point and like I play well in that point, but I still lose that point, I don't care because I'm just like, oh, thank God I got the ball over.
I get very frustrated bowling because I like want, I do well, but then if I like don't do well in front of people, I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm good at this. And bowling couldn't be lower stakes. Like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
When I played like varsity gay league kickball, I like didn't super care about how I came across. But for some reason, if like I'm bowling and people are like watching me and they're like, you're not doing well, I feel like icky. Like I'm like, no, you don't understand. Because it like destroys a version of myself in my head where I'm very good at bowling.
I'm horrible at bowling.
I wasn't allowed to bowl. My last relationship, I always wanted to go bowling as a date. I think it's a fun date. We were on a double date bowling, but yeah. My ex never wanted to bowl because their parents are divorced. And they said that whenever they were hanging out with their dad and the dad didn't know what to do with them or how to talk to them, he would bring them bowling. So it was a triggering experience. But I like think it's such a perfect date.
Yeah, it's fun. But I like to play with bumpers.
All right. Well, this is Just Between Us, a variety show filled with heartfelt advice,
ridiculous games,
and brutal honesty. Do you think you would bring, if you were going on a date with someone, would you bring them to pickleball?
What?
Like if you were a pickleball player and then you were like on going on like a third date with someone, would you be like, do you want to come play pickleball with me?
No, I'm not good enough yet at pickleball.
You want to do something where you're really good at it, so you show off to them.
Or I just have to like be more comfortable with them. Third date feels too soon to pickleball. But maybe okay. Not. I would maybe play tennis on a third. I would play tennis on a third date probably.
Because you have like some skills.
I just feel more comfortable. Like pickleball, like the rules of pickleball are actually like kind of confusing. And so I don't feel confident enough yet that I could like teach somebody how to play pickleball because I'm still learning how to play pickleball.
What if they're a professional pickleball player? Would you invite them?
Well, they'd probably invite me.
Okay, well, we have a great show for you this week. Actually, we're going to be talking to Emmett Ali Akbar, and we're going to talk all about the gig economy and the economics of delivery apps. He has a really great podcast called Delivery Wars that Alice and I both listen to, and this conversation is so interesting.
Yeah, there's a lot more going on when you order delivery food than you might think.
It's fascinating. It's really, we didn't even get to all the stuff, but like we got to so much fascinating shit, and there was like maybe like even like 20 more minutes of fascinating shit we could have talked about. So
yeah, but not a second more than 20 minutes. That's the end of the fascination. And later we're going to be discussing getting older, both our age-related fears and our age-related reliefs, perhaps.
And what happens when you go to that beach that makes you old.
Oh my God, that movie. But first, we have to answer a listener's question. So you know what that means. Hit it. Colorado. So Alex from Colorado says, Dear Gabby and Allison, TLDR, how do you navigate dating as a baby queer and falling for the first person you sleep with who also inconveniently lives across the country?
This is the gayest question we've ever received.
Very long version. I would argue not that long. I'd argue medium version.
Medium.
I'm a 27-year-old cis woman, she, her, and I recently came out as queer and broke up with my boyfriend of 5 years to better understand my sexuality on my own. 3 years ago, I became really close friends with my then coworker, S, she, her, who is queer. We both developed huge crushes on each other, almost culminating in a saucy kiss one night, but we didn't kiss because I had a boyfriend. I was also not yet ready to accept my sexual orientation at the time, so I brushed it off the next day and told her I was drunk and it didn't mean anything and that my OCD made me question my orientation sometimes. I have OCD, but not really around sexual orientation. Aww. I just wasn't ready to accept it yet. This really hurt S and led to an abrupt end of our friendship. We didn't talk at all for 2 years until about a month ago. Now I'm out and single. S and I recently reconnected, and I explained everything to her. I ended up visiting her in her city, and we really hit it off. We had amazing sex, an intimate emotional connection, and we both really like each other.
Aww.
The problem is we live across the country from each other, and I'm still a baby gay trying to understand who I am and what I like in dating partners. How should S and I navigate this very obvious physical and emotional connection that we have between us? Should we keep talking, visiting each other, hooking up when we do? She is the first person I have slept with who is not a cis man, and I am still so new to the queer dating scene. Please send help. P.S. You all are awesome, and listening to your podcast is a highlight of my week, and you are both very funny. Thanks for all that you do. P.P.S. S is also a JBU listener and wants your advice. We talked about this. Haha. She will absolutely scream the good kind if you end up reading this question on the pod. So hello, S.
Okay. This is so adorable. Wow. This is so, so cute. I think you're putting way too much on this. I think this is all good stuff. This is so wonderful. Like the anxiety, I get it. I totally get it. But like, I think living in the moment is what you need to do because this is just like so special and great. You know, like your first queer relationship, your first queer experience is like, you know, the best case scenario is that it's like special and good and all that. I think that you should keep seeing each other. I think that like you don't need to make a huge commitment about it. Like you don't need to decide like now we are monogamously with each other and, you know, this is the thing. But I don't agree. There's some sort of like common thing about like, oh, you shouldn't, you know, the thing is like, you shouldn't marry your first girlfriend if you're queer. You shouldn't, you know, be with the first person that you're with as a queer person. I kind of disagree. I think that that invalidates like some of your past relationships or your agency in some ways because it's dismissive. It's like, oh, you don't know what you're talking about yet. And I think like you do, you know what liking someone is like, you know, when you want to be with someone that kind of hasn't changed. So I think that I don't think there's any problem in terms of like you being a baby gay and getting into a relationship. Now, obviously, like the stereotype is that either you completely U-Haul and shack up and like get married and like get married within like 6 months to your first girlfriend, or you realize like pretty quickly that, you know, you're so new to this world and you're so excited by everything in it that you want to explore all of it. You want to like be really in community in the messy sort of beautiful way that queers are in community. And so I think this is a conversation you should have about like, I think this is maybe a little bit more about like monogamy or about like your level of commitment to each other. Like, is one of you planning on moving? Is one of you, maybe that's something that could happen in a year, in 2 years? Would S be hurt if you hooked up with someone else in your city? And how much do you feel like you want to explore way more before you settle down again? Because you had this boyfriend of 5 years, and maybe you're just used to settling down and really want to settle down. But you did, you know, do a really brave thing, which is break up to better understand your sexuality. So I understand the impulse to get into another relationship immediately because you really like being in a relationship. But also there is so much to explore once you're in a whole new dating pool and a whole new community that I think you should remind S that maybe you need to explore a little bit before like fully committing. And how does she feel about that?
Or I think this is definitely one of those times where checking in with yourself can be really helpful, because is the issue here that like you personally feel like you want to explore more and that you don't want to commit to the first person you have a connection with? Or do you feel like you should explore more and right. you shouldn't commit to the person.
Right.
And it's more like these societal expectations that like you are like worried that you're going to like mess up.
Yeah.
Because I think, you know, and I can't speak to the queer experience of it all, but I think having gone from being engaged and now seriously dating the first person I started talking to really after that, there's this element of like, oh, well, is this too easy in a way? Mm-hmm. Or like, does it feel like I'm jumping into just like the first thing? But then when I look at like the reality of like the quality of my relationship, I'm like, this is the best relationship I've been in. And this is wonderful. And our connection is really strong. And so to throw away that kind of connection because of like shoulds or like expectations, you're really only harming yourself. Mm-hmm. That said, you might also feel like you want to explore more. And then I think definitely having those open communications, talking about it, what works for both of you. And I think what you said about like, it's really more an issue of like monogamy versus non-monogamy, I think kind of hits the nail on the head, because it is long distance. And, right. you know, to make a commitment to somebody long distance is a really big thing. Mm-hmm. And so maybe it is a little bit more of like taking a few months before deciding to be monogamous. Mm-hmm. But I think when you have a really strong connection with someone, that's wonderful.
It's such a gift. And it's such a gift that this person came back around into your life, that you get a second chance. Like, you know, I also think that queers can be very judgmental in terms of like the seasoned queer with the baby gay and like the stereotype in a lot of lesbian movies where, you know, the person is closeted and with a boyfriend and is swept away by this magical woman. And this woman is such a seasoned queer, and maybe she's also a carpenter or something, you know, like that's like the narrative. And so I think I get not wanting to like fall into that cliche. And also, you know, I think queer people are pretty judgmental sometimes amongst ourselves in terms of like, oh, it's the first. It's like, you know, she's going to marry her first girlfriend and stuff, which like, I think.
Why is that bad?
I don't know. You know, I have two friends who they met when my friend was 18, and now they've been together 5 years. And everyone is sort of like expected like, oh, well, you met when you were teenagers, so you're not going to be each other's like final person, you know, that would be nuts or whatever. And neither of them are particularly monogamous. Neither of them are particularly like the type of people who wanted to find each other that young of an age and be together. Like, it's not, that wasn't their plan. And it's sort of like wild to both of them that they're still together and they still work after meeting at 18 to like now kind of mid 20s ish. And they're like, should we break up? Like, is this a thing? Like, we don't want to break up. We're really happy together. But like, we met at 18. We're going to be together till we're old. Like, this is crazy. Then on the flip side, it's like, you're happy. It's a perfect, wonderful relationship. Not perfect, but you know what I mean? Perfectly wonderful. Like, and wow, what a gift that you found each other that young. Like, you know, so I think they've kind of now sort of like let that go. But it is like a thing that gets judged where like if they say, oh, we've been together, you know, 6 years, and then people go, oh my God, you met when you guys were 18. Like, people are judgy about it.
Yeah. But I also think that I know that it's like very different to when you come out, but like you are older, you do have relationship experience.
That's
like
what I'm saying. Yeah. Like, I mean, you know, I guess when you come out, you kind of start over in like a puberty where like, you know, a lot of stuff changes and who you're attracted to changes. Like, I don't think I could not have predicted where I'm at now. So like definitely a lot of like queer growth happened. But like, you can't really predict that. That's why I'm saying be in the present.
Right.
You can't predict that. You know what I mean? You can just like enjoy the present. That's all you can do.
Yeah. But it feels like a big waste to not give this connection a real shot.
Yeah. And queerness is a journey. It is a journey. But like, if everybody's going in with eyes wide open, then like, I don't think there's a problem. And I think like, the stigma that we have about when did you meet and how old were you and how long had you been out and how long had you been gay and how long had you been single is like, who cares?
Again, it's all going to come back to communication and just like making sure that you're on the same page. And if you do decide to commit to this relationship and then a year from now you decide, you realize that like you do want to explore other things, it's like just making sure that you're being honest about that. Mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. And sharing that. And you, but like, you know, you can have the best laid plans in the world, follow mm-hmm. every single thing that you're supposed to do, and the relationship can still implode.
Exactly. And also, how are you supposed to get your first gay relationship if you're like, oh, I shouldn't be, you know what I mean? Like, how are you supposed to like be in one if you don't go in one with someone you have a connection with?
I guess maybe the idea of hooking up with other people first.
Yeah. Or like, or the idea of like, maybe S is anxious about, well, in a year you'll want to leave me because you'll do this. But like, again, it's just like communication. And I don't know, like I have bisexual friends who are married and it's like, to me, I'm non-monogamous. So I'm like, oh, I think like I would, you know, want to see other people. And they're like, no, I'm perfectly happy to like be in this relationship and like, you know, not sleep with the other gendered people. And that, and like people are judgy about that. People are going to find a reason to like have opinions about whatever. And so I think just go for it.
And just see what's right for you. Like try to get rid of all of the noise and sit with yourself and sit with S and figure out what makes sense for the two of you mm-hmm. in this moment as you are now, and then forget the other stuff. But it sounds very lovely and exciting.
Yeah, good for you.
If you want to submit your international question and make your partner scream, send it to justbetweenuspod@gmail.com. That's justbetweenuspod@gmail.com.
Up next, we've got an exciting interview with our highly esteemed guest, Emmett Ali Akbar. Stay tuned.
Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I'm so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, where did you come from? And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes comes out and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic, trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused and I also get super stressed out, and I think that not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com. TRUVAGA.com and enter promo code JustBetweenUs to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's TRUVAGA.com. Check out promo code JustBetweenUs.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her MyLifeInABook.com, and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis, and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with MyLifeInABook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code JustBetweenUs at checkout for 10% off. Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's MyLifeInABook.com. Use code JustBetweenUs for 10% off today. Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, controversial segment known to all of podcasting, Tough Questions.
This week on the show, we have Emmett Ali Akbar. Emmett Ali Akbar is a writer and the host of the podcast Delivery Wars, which explores the economics of food delivery apps. Hello. So my first question is, how bad of people are we for using food delivery apps?
I don't think you're bad people. I think it's like so unrealistic, the price we use. And specifically, I'm talking about food delivery apps, right? That's what we're talking about, which is this idea that like your local restaurant can deliver to you. They've made it so cheap and convenient that it's hard to say no. Like, you kind of get addicted. Like, they like to tap the idea that once you start using it, you kind of don't stop, because mm-hmm. it adds a level of access to your life. Like, let's say you're in a crisis and you need food, your kitchen's on fire, you know, you have people over, whatever kind of thing, you kind of can't, it's hard to go back. That being said, it does add a lot of stress to the restaurants, right? Like, they are being charged a 20 to 30% commission fee, sometimes more, sometimes less, actually, depending on the place you're in. Like, in New York, it can be less. And, you know, restaurants are not a place, like, not a huge money-making place. That's a really hard business. Everyone who tells you, like, I want to start a restaurant, you got to tell them it's hard. It's really, really hard. It's not an easy thing. So taking 20 to 30% out of their order is not super great for them. Depends on if you want to keep your local businesses alive, I think the best way to support them is to actually walk over there or give them a call on their direct line. Sometimes nowadays restaurants are starting their own websites where you can order delivery. I don't think you're a bad person. I do it too. I sometimes try to stop, but it's hard. Sometimes there are moments where I'm like, I don't have another option. I have to use, you know, Grubhub or DoorDash.
So having listened to this whole podcast, there's a lot going on in this world and the evolution of it. And one of the things that I find the most shocking is, even with the pandemic and the food orders going up so much, these companies aren't actually profitable. And can you speak to that? Like, is this all about to burst? Like, will we still have Postmates in 10 years?
Yeah, that blew my mind too, because I came in from the restaurant side and not so much the technology side. So you assume, like, these technological companies that are going public and you know, are spreading through America like rapid fire, you imagine they're very successful on every level. And then you learn they're not making a profit, and your mind is kind of blown. This is like a really typical model in the tech world, which is they get a lot of investor money and they spend a lot of money to get you kind of used to the service. So what Amazon kind of really pioneered, and this is what some of the earlier seasons of this podcast did. The podcast is actually called Land of the Giants Delivery Wars. So it's part of a series about these other tech companies like Amazon, Google. And this is a really typical thing that they will figure out the profitability later. They will make you addicted to it. I think we're seeing some of the ripples of what can happen with Uber right now, where Uber is kind of struggling. The prices are going up for the consumer, right? Like, you'll see people talk about, like, when did Uber get so expensive? Like, mm-hmm. This trip used to be $20 and now it's $50. And that's because all that investor money, that startup VC money, is kind of like, you have to make a transition towards becoming profitable for your shareholders when you go public, like Uber does. Grubhub and DoorDash are public now, so they have to worry about profitability metrics pretty soon. Question of whether they'll last, I don't know. A lot of people, I'm not like an expert on that by any means. I don't think anyone really knows, but they're going to be facing a lot of pressure in the next, like, 10 years or so. And maybe the model will change. A lot of people have a lot of ideas of how this could change. Personally, I have no idea. But I do think I was really surprised at how shaky of a ground a lot of the restaurant delivery companies are on. And also how good of a deal we're getting as consumers. Like, you think, like, DoorDash is expensive and we're still right. getting an amazing deal, actually, because it costs a lot of money to pay a delivery worker.
Yeah, so I was going to ask, okay, so obviously, like, I remember having menus in your house and ordering direct from, you know, pizza or, you know, certain whatever restaurant delivered, which wasn't every restaurant. So, like, once these apps were created, how quickly do we get from, like, restaurants doing their own delivery and, like, people being drivers for certain restaurants to then all of these driver apps? Like, what was the history of sort of getting there?
So this ties with the gig economy, which is a word that even a lot of the drivers use when I spoke to them. This kind of came to prominence like in the mid-2010s with Uber and Lyft kind of becoming a part of our lives. It created like this kind of workforce. But prior to that, like Seamless, for instance, was like a really early one. They basically just were like an online place where you would go place orders for restaurants that already had delivery drivers. Like mm-hmm. It was like the pizza guy kind of tradition, which, you know, I grew up with, that like they employ their own drivers. So at a certain point, Postmates was one of the big companies you mentioned earlier. Like, people in the West Coast are really familiar with Postmates. I'm not so familiar with them because I've always been in the East and Midwest, but basically they popularized this idea that, okay, there's all these drivers for Uber and Lyft. Why don't we just have them deliver food as well? So like it kind of happened in the mid 2010s. And it's just, you know, in fact, in the last year, like a lot of the last year or two with the pandemic, a lot of the need for drivers dried up, and a lot of need for, meaning like rideshare drivers, whereas the need for food delivery rose with the pandemic because people weren't really going around so much. So we saw a lot of that kind of gig workforce economy move towards driving for and delivering for food.
And can we talk a bit about the gig economy of it all? You know, I think there's this kind of mix of people feeling like I get to set my own hours, I get to be my own boss. And then there's also like the stark reality of like that they're not making that much money. They're actually not really their own boss because these apps sort of like, you know, can like favoritize drivers and sort of manipulate how they behave. And so is this a good thing for workers, or is this a terrible thing for workers, or is it more complex?
Can I ask what you guys think? is that okay? Like, I'm really curious what you guys think, because I came away from it often quite confused about it. So I want to know like what you guys think, just looking at it as people who didn't spend as much time like in this world. I feel like I can't see the big picture as much in that way.
It's interesting being in California, because we had this whole Proposition 22, which was that, like, we tried to change the rules so that like these drivers would be employees and then they would be under employee law and like they get all these extra benefits. And then big companies like Uber and DoorDash are like fought back and tried to pass this proposition saying that they don't have to abide by these new rules. And having lived in California, there was so much advertising about it. There was so much promotion about it. And it was all, you know, if you watched a commercial that was put out by Uber, you would be like, yeah, I should vote for this. But then like, if you talk to more people, you were like, oh, actually I shouldn't vote for this. And then it was like kind of really disappointing that the proposition passed, because it made it so that the gig workers weren't employees. And so it's hard, because it's like sometimes I think people vote against their own interests because they're potentially being told something that isn't actually true. Mm-hmm. But again, that would mean that for consumers, the price would go up, and then would as many people be using the apps? And so it's a really tough situation.
Yeah.
I had, you know, I thought I had my opinion. And then when I was listening to the podcast, you know, the whole thing about, well, if you become an employee, then you can't drive for multiple apps. If you become an employee, like, you might be subject to hours and things like that. And I was like, oh, damn. Like, I didn't even think of that. So it is like super complicated. And I think we've made it complicated. And I think the apps have sort of, you know, like, it's interesting of, if you were a delivery driver for a restaurant, you would know, you know, you would be at the restaurant doing stuff, and then you would drive and you would know, I work for this restaurant. And you would kind of come in and have hours and stuff. And then I enjoyed the person that you interviewed, who was like, I actually like that I just sit and wait for a delivery, that I don't have to go into like the pizza place and like help out. But then that person is an employee of the pizza place, which is more secure. It just was really twisted, the way that employment law kind of always is.
Yeah. It hasn't yet caught up, I guess, is part of the issue. Like, Allison, what you said about like not being able to work for multiple companies, like, there's a world in which you're like working one of these jobs for like 35 hours to get your benefits, but you're also working for other companies on the side. Like, it wouldn't preclude that potentially. Whereas I think the apps want to sort of like, if they were to do the employment thing, they would probably want people to be like loyal to one company. And in fact, this comes up now. There's this idea that I don't think we talked about in the podcast, but came up in the reporting, which is multi-apping. So like, the drivers sometimes will see like, oh, I can get an order from DoorDash and Uber from the same plaza going to the same area. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pick up two things and take it to the two different people. And it's more efficient all around for me as a driver. But the apps say like, that's not good for the customer, right? Like, you know, those extra 2 or 3 minutes might make the food stale, I guess, or whatever. But like, you know, these are kind of the questions that come up around like, who has really the control, I think, is the thing. Like, the idea of the employment is kind of maybe a distraction, and it's really about like, how much freedom and independence are these drivers really getting? And if they're not getting freedom and independence, they should be getting more benefits, as like an employee status would give them. And that's kind of the argument the government has actually made. Well, I was really like, all three forms of the California government was saying like, they're essentially employees. You have to give them the benefits that our labor laws since the New Deal have said. And I fundamentally basically agree with that. Like, these people need to be given the benefits if they're working that kind of job. And I think there's like a compromise in there, but I think what it reveals is that the app economy is built on pretty shaky grounds. If you had to make them employees and you couldn't do the business anymore, and the customers, it would be too expensive for the customers, it's probably an unrealistic business, but we're we're like 10 years into this. So it's like hard to say, like, let's get rid of this whole thing that is, you know, it has benefited a lot of people. Like, you can hear a lot of the people who work on the apps. It's been good for them financially. You know, mm-hmm. like there's a lot of bad jobs out there. And if somebody has a, you know, good job that like lets them live a more dignified life, that's also good. But they probably don't realize that they could be getting even more out of it. And the fact that they're like not being paid for waiting, like that person you mentioned who is waiting around. I thought that's so like kind of wild that you could be on the clock for like 4 hours, get no deliveries, and you don't get any money out of that. Like that mm-hmm. to me is really not okay. That's not okay in my view.
Can we talk about the illusion of working for yourself? So like, you know, the paradox of becoming a top dasher and what happens when you are deactivated. And I was so fascinated by the idea of nudges. Like, what are some of the ways where people have the illusion that they're, you know, their own boss, or like even you were talking about the wording of like partners rather than drivers. Can you expand on that?
Sure. So I think the number one thing every driver says is I get to be my own boss. I get to set my own schedule. I think that's the thing that I'll focus on, which is when you get into it, places like DoorDash like to flood the market with drivers. They want to have drivers everywhere so that you can get whatever you want as a consumer, whenever you want it, from anywhere you want it. Like, that's our kind of goal, right? Complete access to everything, no matter what. But what that means is sometimes there's drivers not working. So they do control it a little bit. They set schedules. They ask you to pre-schedule a block. And the pre-scheduled block is not always a guarantee of work. Mm-hmm. Like, we talked to one driver who says, like, typically he doesn't need to sign up, like, for pre-scheduled blocks that, you know, DoorDash offers. And then he signs on and just waits on certain days for, like, hours at a time. So, like, he really needs to do DoorDash's thing where he signs up for the blocks in order to guarantee work. He can't truly just sign on whenever he wants, which is kind of the message that they're receiving. Now, of course, like the ease of it is like kind of amazing. Like I've never worked on these apps personally, but it does kind of blow my mind that I could be like, eh, let's go see if I can get some deliveries. And you can mm-hmm. just turn it on and go. But in places, that's like in New York, where like there's a lot of delivery, but there is this woman, and she was in Coeur d'Alene, and in Coeur d'Alene, you can't just like start delivering from your driveway. You have to drive to the downtown area and then turn on your app. So it's like there's a certain guiding that's happening by the apps that isn't like the complete freedom that they say it is. And the nuances vary depending on apps. Like, I don't want to say like every single app is exactly the same, but there's a lot of ways in which you don't have full control of your schedule, even though it seems like you do.
And that they encourage you to accept all orders, even though some orders might not be profitable for you based mm-hmm. on like the distance and the time it will take and everything.
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. That's the other major thing that drivers talked about, is like you're in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and you have to drive 15 miles for a $3 order. Mm-hmm. You know, like, and that's going back and forth. You know what I mean? That's
right.
Like, that's like half an hour of work. That's $1.50. And that's not including for per hour. That's like $1.50. Mm-hmm. That's not including gas. It's a net zero if you take that order. And we had the same driver who said like she loves DoorDash. It's a great job for her. And then after we interviewed her, she actually got deactivated because she was declining too many orders, or she wasn't completing enough orders. It's like a combination of the two. Like, let's say you show up at the restaurant and the restaurant's like, this order will actually be ready in an hour, which if you ever ordered from a restaurant, sometimes that doesn't happen. Sometimes restaurants are really slow. So like, it's no longer worth it for her, right? She's like, somebody else can pick up this order. I'm not going to wait here for an hour, because they're accepting an order that's like, let's say if it's like a $15 order, if you're waiting like 5 minutes, that's amazing. That's a great rate. But if you're waiting an hour and a half, the price of it goes down a lot for you. Like, a lot of drivers are always doing this calculation, regardless of whether they like DoorDash and Uber Eats or not. They're doing this calculation, like, is it worth it? And it's like really hard to tell a lot of times. And it's just kind of a technique, I guess, that is kind of unique to the gig economy, is like, is this job worth it? And you can mm-hmm. be punished by the app if you like veer too conservatively on the side of like not delivering, not accepting orders that are basically not paying you anything. You have to be good with the bosses. You know, the bosses have to like you. They have like this app of balls.
Exactly.
And then another element that was really interesting was that multiple restaurant owners referred to the apps as the mafia. Yeah.
so funny.
I want to talk about that. What is the food monopoly, like mafia aspect of it?
So it's really funny in New York, because in New York, the two of the restaurants we talked to use a third party delivery service. So they basically said, like, Grubhub is really popular in New York and Seamless. So they use this like third party delivery service. And you'd think like, okay, they're not using Grubhub for their delivery drivers. Why wouldn't they just get off and do delivery on their own? Well, the problem is, they have all the market. Like everyone who wants to go order, like what do the three of us do we want to order? We just go to Grubhub and we scroll through, or DoorDash, and we just go, like, what's good tonight? That's the access that they're paying for. They're paying to be listed online. So to them, that feels like the mafia, because what does the mafia do? It's like, if you want to exist here, we pay us, you know, 10% of your cut, and you'll be okay. You can like be here without being harassed. So these two different restaurant owners independently, like, I didn't tell them the other guy referred to it as the mafia. They both independently referred to Grubhub as the mafia in New York City, because they couldn't even be in the game without them. Like, and they didn't feel that they were providing enough of a service for them to be worth the 15 to 20% they were paying them.
Can we talk about ghost kitchens and cloud kitchens? And my favorite thing is when you go on the app and then it's like something like, it's just wings. And then you order and it's TGI Fridays. Like, can we? Okay.
Chili's. That was Chili's.
Chili's. Yeah. Okay. Like, spell that out for people, because I don't think people realize that's happening.
Yeah. So I think my favorite one that we didn't end up reporting on is Chuck E. Cheese.
No, you did. Pasquale's Pizza.
Right, that's right. But there's like a big story there, which is basically like Chuck E. Cheese is what? It's a place you go to with kids, right? You go in person to Chuck E. Cheese, play arcade games, jump into a ball pit, like, and then there's the animatronic mouse with the pizza. Well, they said, like, well, our kitchen is not always working because the kids eat at like lunchtime and dinner time. How can we like increase our volume so we're delivering pizza and our kitchen is making pizza at all times a day? People are not going to order Chuck E. Cheese when they see it on the app, right? So they've made this thing called Pasquale's Pizza, which is such a funny name to me, spelled with a Q.
I think Pasquale is one of the animals, but don't quote me on that. Yeah.
I think you might be right. So yeah, they just list like a kind of different menu. It's not exactly the same as Chuck E. Cheese, right? It's like slightly different, but to a kitchen, like the branding doesn't matter, right? Like it's still, you know, the chicken cheese pizza or whatever. They just name it something differently. So customers order and they don't even realize that they're ordering from Chuck E. Cheese. Like you mentioned with It's Just Wings. Like every restaurant kind of, a lot of the restaurant chains, I would say, are getting into this. But what's even weirder about it is that, like, there's these kind of online virtual dining concepts, which is the deli, your local deli might say the same thing. Like, I am getting, like, a lot of sandwiches at this time, but I wish I could be, like, selling milkshakes all day long. So, like, there'll be, like, a celebrity milkshake brand that will just, like, give the menu to your local deli, and they'll be delivering it for them. One example would be, like, Mariah's Cookies. Like, if you go on DoorDash right now, you can probably find a place called Mariah's Cookies. Mariah is Mariah Carey, which I like. There's no Mariah Carey on it. Like, when you look at it, you don't see her face or anything. It's just called Mariah's Cookies. There's very few, or if any, in-person Mariah's Cookies places. It's just like your local, like Brio Italian Grill. It's your local deli. It's whatever. Like, they're just baking these cookies and sending them out and stick, like, putting a Mariah's Cookies sticker on it. So that's like kind of mind blowing. And also, what, like, a lot of people think that this question that you asked earlier about the sustainability, a lot of people think like this is where it's going. Like, maybe like in-person dining will be like a separate experience. And when you order on the apps, it's like all these ghost kitchens or online only things where, like, a restaurant is like really an old school model. It's like you have all the space in case people show up, but a lot of people do take out. So like their space isn't being used efficiently, I guess. So like there might be a desire to kind of like separate those two. Like the dine-in is a different experience than takeout. Right now we have like a mix, like the apps have confused it, where like your local place probably wasn't designed to do takeout, but they had to adjust to the idea that you, like, my local Ethiopian spot does delivery, which is not like a place that I would think would be doing a lot of delivery, but apparently they do like 40 to 50% of their stuff is delivery. And it's because customers expect it. They expect to be able to get anything online. So like these, you know, folks have to like decide how to do delivery. Like, how do you do, Injera is designed to be like a flat piece of on like a huge kind of circular plate. Now you have to like stuff it into a container and like send it out. Like, they have to think about all this stuff. So I don't know. We might see a world in which takeout and dine-in are different, but I don't really know. And ghost kitchens, I think, are like people's attempt to deal with this kind of tension in the model of a restaurant.
Because with the ghost kitchen, you don't have that overhead, right? You're literally right. just sort of borrowing someone's existing kitchen to like create your own food that has its own label, but you don't have like service staff. You don't have to have like eating area. So
right.
it's like a workaround. And like, does it help restaurants that currently exist if they like allow all these ghost kitchens to happen in their kitchen?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing, you could just be delivery only, right? Like you could just be like not even have a place for somebody to walk up and order, like not having somebody man the front, and you are just a kitchen and you're only on the app. So we talked to like a barbecue place in Chicago that shut down. And that's what they do now. They don't have a storefront. They just have a kitchen, which they make their barbecue out of and they deliver it. And I think you mentioned cloud kitchens, Gabby. That's something I didn't dig into as much. I feel like it's kind of a branding thing. Like I feel like everyone wants to come up with their own term, like mm-hmm. virtual dining concept, ghost kitchen, cloud kitchen.
Yeah.
I'm hesitant to say like there's like everybody agrees what those things mean.
Yeah, it was like kitchen spaces that were like cubicles, right?
Right.
And you could just like rent one out. I kept thinking the whole time I was listening to the podcast, I was like, but is the food good? Like mm. how, you know what I mean? Like it's like, okay, so you're getting from, you know, a ghost kitchen or like, you know, some places just like selling like Wiz Khalifa's weed food or whatever you were talking about. But like, is the food good? Are you just getting like generic? You know what I mean?
Such a good question. And sadly, I have not had enough of this food to say. I mean, I probably
haven't. Unanswerable. It's unanswerable, but it's definitely like, you know, you order from an app and you're going to get kind of like generic Italian or whatever. But like, if you go out to some, you know, I'm going to name drop Saragina's in New York, that's a different experience.
Right. So I will say though, that this online delivery thing is kind of good for some people. Like I know of a lot of small, you know, obviously like in New York, like a lot of our really most like undersung food purveyors are like immigrant women who like serving whatever thing they can to like support their family, you know, generations of family. And if you have like don't have to set up your own kitchen and you can just go and like to a place where you don't have to worry about customer service. You don't have to worry about, you know, your menu. Somebody sets it, like helps you set it up and all you're doing is just cooking. That's like not the worst way in the world to get into restaurants. So I don't want to mm-hmm. say like it's all like a disaster. Like there's a way in which it enables different kinds of business models that are more kind of tech friendly. You know, like Grubhub's thing for a long time was getting restaurants online. 10 years ago, most restaurants weren't online. Now we're at a place that a lot of people are online. Their menus might be kind of funky, like, or whatever, but at the very least, you can find them online, which wasn't the case. Now is the question is like, how can they take advantage of the online a bit more? And there might be some models that are useful for people. Feels a little dystopian, but a lot of people, like a lot of food writers I talked to were like, it's actually good because it's hiring people that need jobs, you know, like mm-hmm. it's a way for people to keep businesses going. And that's like kind of key. I'm not sure how I feel about it. I don't really order delivery that much, but I should probably order some of that like Wiz Khalifa's fully packed bowl.
Yeah.
Which is the funniest thing in the world to me that he called it the fully packed bowl. It's like fried chicken and Cheetos and hot sauce. And stuff like yeah.
Sounds amazing. So, okay. So I wanted to ask about the DoorDash calls and the DoorDash commission. That blew my mind. Can you talk yeah. about what that was and DoorDash making money off calls and stuff?
So it was Grubhub that we reported on.
Oh, it was Grubhub. I'm yes. so sorry.
That's okay.
DoorDash, justice for DoorDash. yeah. So it was Grubhub. Okay. So what was this? The sitch there.
So basically, this might exist on DoorDash too, by the way, but I just wanted to like speak about what I reported on and what I know best, which is in Grubhub in New York City, a lot of restaurants were finding that they were getting charged for phone calls. Now, you think about that and you're like, that's kind of weird. How could Grubhub charge a restaurant for a phone call? Mm-hmm. The way they do that is when you go to the Grubhub page for your favorite restaurant, they generate a number that routes through Grubhub first. So you're actually calling the restaurant, but not before Grubhub, the mafia, opens the door for you, right? Like, or like, this is why they feel like it's the mafia, right? Like they open the door for you. They're not providing any service besides discovery. Personally, I've done this where I say, I want to call the restaurant directly, order from them and reduce the commission cost. So I go and they don't like maybe have a website or like maybe Grubhub is the first thing that shows up. So I click on Grubhub, I call that phone number. Now I know they are not getting a benefit from that. They're still being charged. And what's weird about it is they can't determine the order that you've done. Mm-hmm. So they do like an average. So like they do between like for this restaurant, the Handful Noodle and the Expat in Harlem, they were charging between like $5 to $8, $5 to $7 about, like approximately per order. So like if I'm ordering like an $11 noodle for myself and now they're being charged $5 to $7 for that yep. order, like that's a crazy amount of money to mm-hmm. be taking from them. And in a lot of cases, it's an algorithm that was determining how to charge because there's nobody on the phone listening, actually,
right.
listening to the calls. So the algorithm says, you know, this call lasts 30 seconds, it's an order. But sometimes mm-hmm. it wasn't an order. The person was just like, hey, like, do you have this dish? Like, and they were like, mm-hmm. no. And they actually hung up and Grubhub was actually charging them for that.
Yep.
So there's a lawsuit actually, a couple of lawsuits that have happened outside of New York City where people have sued Grubhub for it. Grubhub says like, you're right, we should only charge for orders on the phone that result in orders. So they still believe that like they should be able to get money off of phone call orders, but they basically are saying like there are a lot of fraudulent charges. There are some fraudulent charges is their position. Like let's say you also place a burrito order and you go, hey, you know that burrito I ordered? Can you take the pork off of it? I forgot that there's pork on it.
Second call, yeah.
Second call. So they're charging commission on the website and the second call they're charging like $5 to $7. Grubhub was like, yeah, that's not cool. We shouldn't do that. And so they say that they've stopped doing it. The kind of messed up part about it too is the restaurants asked for an audit and to get like some of their money back for these double dip calls. And they were like, really, they found it really hard to figure out whether they had been refunded or not. Like I asked a couple of times this one restaurant, he was like, I don't think I've been refunded, but I don't really know, which is kind of crazy to know. Wow. You don't know where your money is going. You know what I mean?
You know, obviously it's going to be hard for a lot of us to go cold turkey on not using these apps, but how do we be like a more conscientious consumer? Like, is it making sure that you tip really well if you do use it?
Definitely tip your drivers. The drivers are making most of their money off of the tips. So you should definitely tip the drivers really well because they are not going to make a living wage if you don't tip them. I have gotten into fights with some of my friends about this. They're like, I don't tip them. Like, you have to tip them because they are not going to get... You have to tip them. So please tip your drivers. Now, the other thing that I would say is one of the things that the apps have done, like just like, you know, kind of, if I can get like a little philosophical, is like distance us from the restaurant, the experience of the restaurant. We don't connect to the restaurant when we order through a delivery platform. So my suggestion is if you like a place, it's in your neighborhood, because typically a lot of times you're ordering from a neighborhood, follow them on Instagram or go in person and ask them, what is the best way for me to order for you? You might be surprised to find that they do offer delivery and they're fine with you doing delivery, but they have their own website, they have their own platform. So talk to them, ask them what's best for you. They might say like, we're really struggling and we'd really prefer if you just call on the phone, not through Grubhub's website, but like through our own phone number and you pick up. That's, I think, the way to be a conscientious consumer is to just talk to your restaurants and to tip well and to understand, like to minimize when you can. Although like I totally get it. Like some people also have like, I want to note that people have mobility issues. People have kids, you know, mm-hmm. we heard a lot about moms who like, it was like a lifesaver for them that they didn't have to cook or go grocery shopping with like being a single mom alone at home. So I want to acknowledge that there's some benefits for people too. Just talk to your restaurants and tip well. That would be my two pieces of advice.
And with the tip, are you, you know, because sometimes these orders are really, you know, cheap. Like, should you be doing it off of like the 20% of the order, or should you have like a base minimum that you're always tipping a driver?
Allison, that is a great question. And I can't believe I never had that conversation with any of the drivers, but I think they understand, like they can make that decision. Like the order is going out to a lot of different drivers, right? So like, if it's like a 5-minute drive for them, then yeah, like tipping 20% on a $12 order is pretty good because it's only 5 minutes of work. I went with a driver who did that and I was really shocked at like how quickly the most efficient version of delivery, like they're delivering like 3 or 4 or 5 things an hour. And in that case, like, yeah, it's good. It's pretty good money like to make $5 off of 10 minutes of work, but you can't really know that. So I don't have a firm answer. I think being generous is nice, is good. Like being generous is always good because you also don't know if the restaurant is going to screw over the driver. But it's like, the truth is the app should be paying the drivers. It shouldn't be the tip. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The tip is such an unreliable way for drivers to get paid. So I'm just not a fan of it in general that they relied on that model because the tip came from the restaurant model, right?
Right.
Where you are busing a lot of tables simultaneously, right? Like if you've ever worked as a waiter or waitress, you have a couple of tables. So you know, like if this table doesn't tip, the other table will tip. as a delivery driver, you're doing one delivery at a time, yeah, most of the time. So you do not know how profitable it'll be until it's done. Mm-hmm. And as a consumer, that's not really on you to know that. It's kind of a bummer, but like, we can't do anything to control that. Be generous. That's all I can say, I guess. I do probably 20%, 25%. That's what I do. But maybe now that you're saying it, I'm like, maybe I should just do a flat rate. Maybe you're right.
I love a flat rate. Flat rates are the way to live our lives. True. This has been so informative, and I'm sure we're all going to cook tonight and or pick up ourselves. But would you like to play a silly game show?
Absolutely. I love silly game shows.
Yay. So you and Gabby are my contestants. I'm going to give you a couple of hypothetical situations. You can ask any clarifying questions you might have. And then I just decide whose answer I like better.
Okay, great. That sounds great.
So the first game is America's favorite game show. Would you stay with this cheater? You find out that your partner of 17 years is publishing a romance novel that is incredibly autobiographical, except for the main plot, which showcases the main character, clearly based on your partner, having an elaborate affair with their neighbor, who is clearly based on your actual neighbor. Would you stay with this fictional cheater?
Did I know that they were attracted to the neighbor?
No, not until you read the manuscript.
And so my assumption is that they are hooking up?
I don't know. They say that they're not, that nothing's actually happened, but they clearly have this elaborate fantasy life with the neighbor that they based an entire book off of.
So what's the truth? Do we know the truth?
Nothing has actually happened. They just wrote, they just spent hours and hours writing this book about your neighbor.
Does the neighbor know?
Well, no, but based on the pages, it seems like the neighbor's been pretty flirty.
Is the neighbor going to read the book?
It depends how well it does.
Well, is the neighbor horrified or like really happy? That's another question too. Like, is your, like, because the other element is like your partner is like a creep also. Like, right? It's not mutual, and like has developed this fantasy world that it's not based in reality also.
At this point, the neighbor has yet to read the book because it's going into publication.
Right.
But okay, but is the neighbor into my partner?
The neighbor's always been very friendly, and it appears like maybe flirty, but you don't know how much is in your partner's head.
I don't want to police my partner's art, so I will stay.
Okay.
Yeah, I would have a lot of conversations. I don't think it would be like, my first thing would be like, this is over. I don't think I would start there. I would definitely start with a lot of conversations about this because it is a little funny, but I also, you know, I don't know. I would probably also stay.
How am I portrayed in the book?
Not well.
Aww, but do they say
and
that?
And at the end of the book, they leave you for the neighbor.
Wow.
But they go, it's just fiction. Don't worry, honey baby. That's their name for you.
Yeah, that sucks. But yeah. I guess I would stay.
Yeah, I think I would also stay. But I would have a lot of doubts. 17 years is a long time.
I know.
I'm in a 10-year relationship. So I feel like I feel like I'm thinking about it in that context. But
what would you do if it was your partner right now?
I would be very surprised because they are not a writer. I don't know. I don't know. I think I would stay in the beginning and start opening some doors though in the back. Uh-huh. I think that's basically where I'd be.
Well, unfortunately, the book becomes a major hit and they leave you for the neighbor.
No!
I'm sorry. I don't control this universe.
Yes, you do. But you do.
Wow, you tortured us.
Oh, that's only the first one. It's all torture, baby.
Here we go. Our second one. Are you a terrible parent? Your child, 14, has been hanging out with a new group of girls who you consider to be very rude and not a good influence. To prevent the friendship, you start to hang out with them whenever they are over at your house and force them to watch animal YouTube videos and play charades. Eventually, they stop coming to your house because you are so annoying and stop hanging out with your daughter. Are you a terrible parent?
No, I think you're a good parent.
You're a great parent.
Really?
Yeah, because if they were her true friends, they would still stay. They would still hang out.
Just not at your house.
Yeah, but they're showing their true colors and they're not real friends. They're not sticking around through the embarrassment of having me as a parent.
Yeah, I think when you're a teenager, you definitely feel like everyone is out to get you. And it's like the people that you like, their actions should be forgiven. Like you forgive a lot of really bad stuff.
I know.
But if somebody can't like spend time with your parents, that means they're probably not. I mean, like, watching animal YouTube videos in terms of like weird parent behavior, like, isn't so bad. You know what
but
I mean? Like,
hours of it. It's all videos from 2015 everyone's already seen.
I'm just imagining your kid is at school and everyone calls them like monkey mom kid or whatever. Like, it ruins their reputation.
Yeah, that really rolls off the tongue. Monkey mom kid.
Bananas bozo. Okay, I think you are a good parent. And I think that your kid will grow up and hate you, but they will be very polite.
Maybe I'll just go on a whim and say, yeah, I think you're a bad parent because you could have come up with a better tactic. You know
like
what I
what?
Mean?
Like what?
Yeah, like what, Ahmed? What do you think?
Well, I would ramp up. Hours in the beginning is not great. You know what I mean? You got to talk to them one-on-one first before you show them YouTube videos. It feels like a stalling tactic. You know what I mean? It feels like a stalling tactic. I would definitely not start there. By the way, this exact scenario happened to me where my parents were... I was a very classic Muslim, like, teenager kid in the sense that I was, like, raised with parents who just were like, you know, you don't date, you don't do drugs, you don't whatever. And, like, I was obviously, like, you know, as it was a teenager who was like was attracted to people and like had crushes on people, but right. I was definitely not doing any drugs, like nothing bad. My parents were convinced that my friends were a horrible influence on me and like that I was like a huge stoner, which I was not in high school at all, and they just kicked them out of the house, which worked for me, I guess. I continued to be the same throughout most of my my high school years, so I don't know, maybe just let them do their thing, they'll figure it out. My dad has this thing, he says, You can only guide a kid, you can't control them.
Wow, that's so healthy.
So he said they will do what they make their own decisions. I don't know where he came up with this, but and I think the animal YouTube video is trying to control them. You know what I mean? So yeah. I think that.
What about the charades?
Charades is like
pretty fun.
It is fun, but it's like they have to like it. You have to get on their level.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I said bad parent.
We'll go with good intentions, poor execution, parent. That's the final answer.
Okay.
Okay, our final game. Is this a date? You get invited to a housewarming party, but are nervous about attending because of the Delta variant. There is a ton of yummy food available, but you can't eat it because you are wearing your mask indoors. The only other person wearing a mask approaches you and asks if you would like to eat outside with them on the sidewalk 6 feet apart. Is this a date?
Wow, so many plot twists. Like, I forgot that it was, is this a date? I say no, I don't think it's a date. I feel like I've been in that scenario before, I feel like. And
you've asked a stranger to eat on the sidewalk with you 6 feet apart?
A stranger. No, I guess not. Not a stranger.
I think it's a date.
Why?
Because they're asking you to go outside. You're probably going to talk privately. Obviously, because you're 6 feet apart, you're not going to kiss.
Not yet.
Okay, are you going to exchange phone numbers?
I can't tell you that. You have to decide in the moment if it's a date before the end of the date.
Am I into them?
Well, from what you can see of their eyes, yes.
Exactly. I was going to say, they have nice eyes.
I think it's a date.
Yeah, I don't think it's a date. I think it's a breakout room of a party that's just gone outside. It's like an extension. It's like in the party cinematic universe, you know what I mean? But it's not, it's its own spin-off date, if you know what I mean.
Well, I hate to break it to you, but it is a date and it's the most romantic date you've ever had.
I win!
Because there's nice lights outside, it's secluded. There's the buzzing of the insects, that's sort of nice ambiance.
What are we eating?
Frog legs. So that part's not great. You didn't know what it was.
And you're making 8 feet eye contact the whole time while you're eating the frog legs.
Yeah.
So beautiful. A guy walks up with a violin, starts playing.
And you're like, get away from us. You're not wearing a mask.
Wow. Oh, wow. Well, Ahmed, thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about you and your work?
Sure. I'm on Twitter at RadBrownDads. That's probably my most prolific place. I just wrote a piece for Eater about these like illicit WhatsApp mangoes. People are paying like $35 for a box of mangoes.
Wow.
Off of WhatsApp. I'm like a food writer and podcaster. And then Delivery Wars is on podcast platforms everywhere. Sorry, I forgot what they were called. You can find Delivery Wars, you know, anywhere you get your podcasts. And yeah.
Amazing. Thank you
Thank you for having me. This was great.
Stick around after the break. We'll be talking all about getting older. Uh-oh.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused, and I also get super stressed out, and I think that not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, oh, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, Truvaga.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's Truvaga.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS.
Back to Just Between Us. It's time for topics.
XXXXXXX, baby.
Baby.
Baby. Which is interesting that we say baby for an episode about old age.
Well, not old age, but getting older.
Here's the thing. I have started getting work done in the sense that lips doesn't really have to do with age, but I have filler in my cheeks. I've been telling myself it's a trans thing. I'm like, I want more of a masculine jawline. It's like a trans thing, but it's not. It's more of like in some ways, maybe subconsciously, it is just because of vanity, because of like sagging sort of jowls. And I have a lot of weirdness around like mommy issues, but I have a lot of weirdness around like me looking so much like my mom and my mom looking so much like her mother. And sometimes I like it. And sometimes I see pictures of my grandmother. I see my mom. See, it looks like looking at like a Dorian Gray painting of like myself. Mm-hmm. And then I get like really, and my mom looks great. My mom like, you know, takes care of her body and like does all this workout stuff, has like a little like workout pedal thing under her desk while she works. And like, is like pretty like fine. But I get like some sort of like weird heart palpitation about like seeing my future.
Because do you associate being old with being bad?
Okay, two things. One, I love getting older in terms of like wisdom and ability to function. And like the way that like things don't bother me as much. And that is also like time and growth in like working on my bipolar disorder, where I'm less chaotic. I don't jump to anger. Like I don't jump to this is the worst thing ever and I'm gonna die and like all this kind of stuff about like minor annoyances. Especially I see it in like conflict with Mal, where I go, this is fine. You don't need to blow this up. You don't need to make it a whole thing. Like in terms of like wisdom and stuff, it's great. And perspective. In terms of what I look like, I'm very concerned about being hot. And I have a lot of weirdness, even though like friends of mine, like I objectively see friends of mine in their 40s and 50s who are gorgeous. And not in a way where it's like, oh, they like, you know, are stereotypically, but like, I think, oh, that person is attractive, but I can't extend it to myself.
Why is it so important to you to be hot?
I don't know. I just started getting in my head about people in their 20s thinking I'm old. I think I'm dealing with obviously like a lot of unspooling the tie between like being sexually attractive to other people and my worth. And I'm really like pushing that, like getting that, getting rid of that. But then I like see my arms in a picture and I'm like, oh my God, they're sagging. And like, I get really upset. Or like, I think about like, sometimes I just look at my hands and I'm like, oh my God, are these gonna become like old person hands? But then I don't judge other people. I just judge myself. Mm-hmm. I don't know. What's your aging situation?
I'm trying to be okay with it and embrace it and stuff. I think that for me, like, I'm thinking about, like, will I ever get work done? Like, what does that mean if I did get work done? Because part of me feels like if I do get work done, what I'm telling myself is that the only way to look beautiful is to look young. And I don't know if that's something that I want to reinforce in myself. For now, it feels like that's not something I really want to pursue. And I'd rather just like embrace the aging process and be more okay with that. And like, I'm seeing more gray hairs and like, they don't freak me out. It's more just like, oh, look at that. But I think that the thing that is starting to like rear its head a bit more is the childbirth of it all.
Oh, well, do you know what you want?
I don't know. I mean, you know, I want to have a stable, successful career and I want to have children. I don't know if I want to have children without having a stable, successful career.
I know.
So that feels tricky and it feels more like there is a my life got set back in a way by like having this broken engagement, restarting again. Like I'm nowhere near being in a place to have kids. Like, and so just feeling a bit of that time pressure and like the reality of like how exhausting it is to have children and being like, will it be really tough to be an older parent? Like, will I ever feel like stable enough to do it? Is it even selfish to do it when the world might not be here for them?
Yeah.
So I think that that is like where the age thing comes in the most for me. But like, yeah, I'm definitely like consciously thinking about like, I look different. That's okay. Like I don't want to fight this process of getting older. I want to figure out a way to have like a healthy relationship to it. It's holding two things at once. It's saying that like looking older doesn't mean you're less beautiful and then also not caring as much about how you look. So it's like doing those two things at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, I have no concept of who is what age. Like when I'll see like someone who's like in their 60s and I'll be like, the person's so hot. And they'll be like, that person's in their 60s. And I'll be like, what? I think it's more divorced from attractiveness. And also attractiveness is so subjective. Like it's so, so, so subjective. So like to me being like, oh my God, I need to look how I looked when I was 25. That's when I was hot is like, I mean, to who? You know what I mean? It's was subjective the whole time. I'm an acquired taste. And so I don't know. But then for myself, I want to look like a real housewife. I don't know. Like I want to get work done. I try to be open about it, right? So like if someone comments and they say anything about my lips or anything, I am always like, they're not real, you know, or I try to like, I think age is like so all over the place because people, what you've had done, how you dress, like how you keep your hair. There's like this really fun TikTok where this girl was like, I'm in my 30s and I look like this. And how come in the 50s, women in their 30s looked so old? Mm-hmm. And then she went and did her hair and makeup, how it was fashionable in the 50s for women that age and was like, I look old. Like it's right. It's all, it's so dependent on like subjective stuff.
Yeah. And I guess I just have also been waiting to feel like I understand things better. And like, you know, that whole thing of like, I feel much more emotionally stable and wise about some stuff, but then other like practical things, I'm like, oh, I still don't know how to do this.
I feel, we've talked about this on the show, but I feel like an adult. I feel like I've had to read things and like figure out stuff. I have a mortgage now. I have a mortgage. Like, also, like, my sister was staying here and she used up a lot of electricity and we got the electricity bill and it was really high. And I was, like, stomping around being like, this doesn't grow on trees. Like, I'm old. Yeah, I don't know. Old is so subjective. I have no idea. I mean, my grandmother, Maymay, was, like, in her 90s and she looked like she dressed like a teenager. You know what I mean? There's no, it's like subjective. I don't know.
I think I'm just getting scared in terms of like my parents getting older, and the older I get, the older my parents are.
That totally
whole thing is like very scary to me.
My dad's elderly. I mean, my dad's like, you know, in his mid-70s. He's an old man. And you'll see like, you know, obituaries, and it'll be like, died at 75, and everyone will be like, he lived a good life. And I'll be like, what? Like, you know, like people think that it's young, I guess, but because people live to be like 100 or in their 90s, but nobody's like, oh, wow, so tragic. He died so young at 75. But to me, like he looks elderly now. You know what I mean? Like that is like, you know, weird and new, where it's like, I've gotten older, but he's like, you have to kind of accept. To me, I have to accept that he's like old, you know?
I refuse to accept that my parents are older, that they'll ever die.
How old are your parents?
So young. No, my dad's about to turn, I think, 67.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom's going to turn, my mom just turned 66.
Yeah, my parents are, I mean, my mom's around that age. My dad is like old man dad. Like I have old man dad.
That's the next big transition of like, but they, I don't know, like my parents seem really young to me. That's the other thing, right? It's like your perception of age completely changes. Where like when I was younger, in your 60s was old. And now I'm like, my parents aren't old. Like I genuinely don't feel like they're old. So somehow like coming to terms with like everything, again, just staying in the moment and appreciating things as they are, and also not seeing aging as like inherently bad or like a decrease in your value, even though our society tries to suggest it is.
What highlights for me too is Mal's niece, Harper, who is 2 now. When I started dating Mal, Steph was pregnant. And like now Harper is 2 and like fully is like, Gabby, come and like talks to me. Yeah. And I'm like, and we were talking about Mal and I, how crazy it is that Harper will be like a teenager and just be like, you know, this is my aunt. They've always been here. And like that, it's sort of like how I have an uncle who is married to my aunt, who I've never thought about as not related to me.
Right.
And so as Harper gets older, you know, like when Harper's 8, it's really going to like be wild to me. And I said, I'm very close with my aunt. Obviously, we had her on the show. Check out the episode, Michelle Dunn Baker. And I was talking to her and I was like, is it wild to you that I'm 33 and like calling you on the phone? And she was like, every time. She was like, it is like you were a baby. And like now you're like giving me advice. like she was like, yeah, it feels nuts that you are like almost 30, that 35 years have gone by almost like that. Because I feel like I'm going to feel that way about Harper, where I'm going to be like, Harper's going to be like going to college. And I'm going to be like, that was yesterday. You were 2.
Yeah. I mean, my niece is 7. My other niece is 4. It's like time flies, but you're like, I'm the same. Or wait, no, I'm not. I'm actually not the same at all.
Yeah. And like, you know, you see pictures of Michelle sort of like holding me. And you're like, that baby is me.
Yeah. Whenever you feel old, just look at a baby photo and go, that baby is me. That's our big
that
advice.
Baby was me. And like now she's like, you know, she's going through a bit of a tough time with Steven because he's sick again. And like, I'm like, you know, talking to her and comforting her and talking to him and stuff. And I'm like, you guys like saw me poop my pants.
Melissa, you want to come on in and share your thoughts?
Age. We're getting older every day.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all we needed.
That's it.
Melissa, would you go to the beach that makes you old?
That makes me old?
The beach, the old beach.
I know the movie that you're talking about, but no, I like to enjoy every day as it is.
Yeah.
I don't need to see into the future or go to the past. Well, I think about going to the past all the time, but
yeah,
I don't need to get older.
Like I was born when my eyes, nose and ears and mouth were the same size as they are now, but just on a tiny head. So like as I've gotten older and grown, like I think my features have spread out to a place. Like if I had to go back to middle school and just like imagine this like Mr. Potato Head situation on a smaller head, I look so much better now. So I would not want to go to a place that made me younger, because I think I look at pictures from college and I'm like, what? Were you even, what is that haircut? Like, what were you doing? Why are your glasses so tiny? Like,
but it was good for that time.
Yeah.
You don't remember things at that specific time.
I thought I was hot shit. And
yeah,
I looked...
and you were at that time.
Yeah, it's really rough. So what do we rate this episode?
I will rate it 72 out of 50. 8 gig economies.
Ooh. I will rate it 100 out of 99 hot old people who are just thriving in the assisted living facility, getting it on.
I'm going to give it 9 out of 6 long distance figuring stuff out relationships.
Hey,
yes!
Me and Mal are a product of one of those, baby.
Yeah, you
success
are.
Success story.
You could go on the long distance circuit and just really talk about making it work.
Yeah, I mean, that's so gay. Like, Drew's in a long distance thing right now. Like, it's just, like, classic. Thank you so much to Emmett Ali Akbar for being our guest.
Just Between Us is a Forever Dog production hosted by me, Allison Raskin.
And me, Gabby Dunn.
Produced by Melissa D. Montz.
Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey.
Brendan Burns composed our killer theme music.
To listen to this podcast ad-free, sign up for Forever Dog Plus at foreverdogpodcast.com/plus.
Check out video clips of our podcast on YouTube at youtube.com/foreverdogteam.
Or youtube.com/justbetweenusshow. And make sure to follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Forever Dog Team to keep up with all the latest Forever Dog news. Also at Allison Raskin, at Emotional Support Lady, at Gabby Road, at BWM Pod, and at She Is Not Melissa. And if you like this podcast, please leave an Apple review and a rating. It really helps us. Like, we really, really need them. I know everyone asks, but please leave one for us if you like the show. It helps us so much. Go to Apple and leave a 5-star review and a rating. You can write whatever you want. And yeah, please, 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 we would really appreciate it. Bye!
Forever Dog!
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.